Colonel Haynes, Reel 1. Colonel Haynes, what were your reactions when war was declared in August 1914?
Well, my first reaction was more or less a blank, because I really didn't think much about it. I was only just 18, and I, right at the start, I didn't think that it would affect me to any extent. As a matter of fact, I was in an office in the city. I was an article clerk to a firm of chartered accountants, and I was due for a fortnight's holiday, and I went on that holiday just about August the 4th. When I came back from that holiday, I went back to the office on the Monday morning, and a friend of mine phoned up, and he said, "What are you doing about the war?" Well, I'd thought nothing about it at all. He said, "Well, I've joined my brother's regiment, which is the HAC. He said, "If you like to come along, I can get you in." So, sure enough, at lunchtime, I left the office, which was in Southampton Row, went along to Armory House, which is a city road, and there was this chap, my friend, waiting for me. There were a queue of about 1,000 people trying to enlist at the time.
All in the HAC?
All in the HAC, yes, right down the city road. But he came along the queue, and he pulled me out of the queue, and he said, "Come along." So I went right up to the front and into the gates, where I was met by a sergeant major at a desk, and my friend, his name was Ashton Lawrence, as a matter of fact, he introduced me to the sergeant, and the sergeant said, "Are you willing to join?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well," he said, "how old are you?" I said, "I'm 18 and 1 month." He said, "You mean 19 and 1 month?" So I thought a moment. I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Right, oh, well, sign here, please." He said, "You realize you can go overseas." And that was my introduction to the army. Well, I joined then, and for about a week we were at headquarters. We were kitted out in terrible old uniforms. It wasn't modern stuff at all. Am I talking too much? And within a fortnight, we'd been inspected by His Majesty King George V, and we marched, we went off to Essex, to Averley, into camp. The rumour was that we were going to train for 6 months there and then go to Egypt. We were a battalion, I should think, of about 1,100 or 1,200 strong, and most of us, let's be fair, we had had OTC experience. We weren't completely green. I mean, we could all, we knew all a bit about shooting and parade work and that sort of thing, so we weren't completely green. But at any rate, we were at this camp for about a week when there was a panic one evening when we were on the ranges, and they said, "Everybody back to camp." We went back to camp, and they said, "You're leaving tomorrow morning for an unknown destination." Well, at that time, we hadn't got proper rifles. We'd got the long rifles, not the ordinary service rifle. We hadn't got webbing equipment. We'd got this white Slade Wallace stuff. And well, to cut a long story short, all this stuff arrived at night, and during the night we were kitted out in this stuff. We hadn't a clue how to put this webbing together, even a lot of us. But at any rate, by about 6 o'clock in the morning, we were ready to depart, and we did depart by train from somewhere. I forget where we marched to. But without any by or leave from without any leave or without anything saying goodbye to one's family or anything, I remember that I wrote a postcard when I was in the train and chucked it out of the window at a station, hoping that it would be delivered to my people at home. That was all. And we arrived that evening at Southampton. That was on the 18th of September 1914. And we embarked that evening. And, well, that was the start of things. We went more or less across the channel, as far as I remember. But the rumour was, I don't know if it's correct, that the Uhlans, they were the German cavalry, were on the heights opposite Boulogne. So we crept down the coast and eventually, about 2 days later, got into Saint-Nazaire, which is at the mouth of the Loire. From there, we split up into companies. With one company stayed at Saint-Nazaire, and my own company, number three company, went to Nantes. Mm-hmm. And there we were on lines of communication, I should think, for more or less a month. But we were training, and we were down at the docks. We were unloading lorries and all sorts of things, any old job that you could think of.
Yes, at the same time as continuing your military training.
Oh, yes, it was training and doing both jobs. Yes. And we did guard's duty in Nantes. There were various odd things to do, pickets, mm-hmm. and that sort of thing.
You were primarily an infantry battalion, were you?
Completely infantry, yes. Oh, yes, no, although our name's Honourable Artillery Company. Mm-hmm. That goes back into antiquity.
Yes.
And it was a question of... We were an infantry battalion. Mm-hmm. 1,100 of us went out with that battalion. And the great thing about it was that in our regiment, you have to join in the ranks. So there's no question of being commissioned straight away. You have to do your stuff in the ranks before you can be commissioned. So everybody had been a private soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And that still exists too.
Yes.
Mm. How's that going? All right.
Yes. When the war was declared, how long did you think it would last?
Well, I thought the same as everybody else. Everybody said it'll be over by Christmas, and you've got to get out soon, otherwise you won't see anything. But I don't know if it was my opinion or if everybody was saying it. That was the whole thing about it.
Hmm? Did you change your mind when you got to France?
Not at once, of course. When we got into action, yes, which was later on, October, November, one certainly changed one's mind when we found how well organised Jerry was compared with us, for instance, and how thinly we were on the ground, of course,
mm-hmm.
because that first winter, there were the regular divisions who'd been through Mons and that sort of thing, and they were reinforced by a certain number of units, such as ourselves, the HAC and the London Scottish and the Liverpool Scottish, and I can mention a few other London regiments. But apart from that, we had a terrific line to hold, and it was a question of being never out of the war area. You spent the usual thing was 4 days in the front line, 4 days in support, and 4 days in reserve, and then you went on until the cows came home, sort of thing, mm-hmm. like that. Unless you did, we never called it a battle, we always called them a show, if you'd. Mm-hmm. And unless you did a show, and then of course things were a bit different.
When you say that the front was thinly held, as far as you were concerned, did that mean that you didn't see many people either side of you, or that
no, in depth, there was nobody behind. I mean, there was literally nobody behind except the service people, like the Army Service Corps and that sort of thing, who supplied. But as far as the fighting troops were concerned, they were all very near the front line the whole time, and they had to, I mean, practically the whole time you had to sleep with your boots on to reinforce in case things went wrong anywhere and that sort of thing, even if one was in support, not in reserve so much. In reserve you got your clothes off, but if you're in support you had to sleep in your clothes.
This was in the winter of 1914.
Winter of 1914, yes.
It improved a bit as the war went on, did it?
Oh, very much so, but the winter of 14 was extremely hard. There's no doubt about that, because we had no amenities whatsoever. It was just ditches, the trenches were ditches, waterlogged ditches, and one was often up to one's knees in frozen mud, and you could do nothing about it at all except stick there. The actual fighting, in my opinion, was nothing like it was in later years of the war, in 16 and 17 are the years I knew most from a fighting point of view, and of course the casualties and everything there were terrific. But in 14 the casualties were a lot of sickness, and more the shelling. There was shelling, of course, every day and that sort of thing, but nothing like the intensity of later on.
Did the Western Front prove different from what you had expected it to be when you arrived there?
I didn't know what to expect, just hadn't a clue. We met the people when we were, before we went into the line, we met the old sweats coming back from Mons and that sort of thing, and they got their tails up all right, but on the other hand, they gave them the most gruesome tales and frightened us to death. There's no doubt about what we were to expect. You see, we were just ordinary civilian soldiers. You know, we weren't real soldiers at all.
How much training did you actually have by the time you arrived in the trenches?
Practically none. Practically none. You see, we'd had a certain amount of cadet corps training, practically everybody. But apart from that, it was only these few weeks when we weren't doing fatigues and guard duties, the odd training we had before we went into the line. But the finest training for warfare is the actual warfare itself. In a fortnight, you can learn more than 2 years of any training can teach you, but there's not the slightest doubt about that, in my opinion. And before the end of the turn of the year, we were a very, very seasoned battalion. And I say it without boasting or bragging, we were as good as any battalion, any regular battalion who were in the line. As a matter of fact, we joined in November 15, we joined the 3rd Division, which was one of the crack divisions of the regular army. And from that time, we were part of the 3rd Division up at Ypres and round about Ypres for until the following September. So that was practically a year. And as far as junior officers are concerned, practically every time we came out of the front line or into reserve, they asked for volunteers to go and become junior officers in these regular battalions, with the result that by Christmas 1914, lots of fellows we'd been sleeping with in old trenches and that sort of thing a few weeks before, we were calling sir in these regular battalions.
Yes.
Is this the sort of stuff?
Were there any particular tasks that you were called upon to undertake for which you had not been trained?
Well, we hadn't been trained for any of the tasks we were called upon to undertake. It was all improvision, really. We could, the ordinary infantryman, he shot his rifle, and we had a couple of Vickers guns in the battalion. That's all the machine guns the battalion had in those days, and they were specially trained people who used to have to hump up their ammunition for them, which was a hell of a job, because sometimes one had marched 2 or 3 miles to get near the firing line, and then we had to carry not only all our own kit with 250 rounds of ammunition, but sometimes they'd ask us to, between two people, to carry up 1,000 rounds of machine gun ammunition as well. And in those conditions, where in the winter of 14, when Everything was as muddy as it could be, and there was really no drainage or anything at all. Of course, it was a terrific task, and from a physical point of view, it was a killing job, but we most of us got through it.
If there were, did you do anything yourselves to deal with shortcomings in equipment, such as improvising jam tin bombs or trench clubs?
No, we made sort of trench clubs, you know. Most of us carried a stick as well as a rifle, because that was just a balance. You were carrying so much stuff that in this mud and slime, you had a stick. And some fellas made these sort of knob carry things. Whether they used them or not's another thing. We were always very near the Hun in those days. The trenches were sort of anything from 30 yards to a couple of hundred yards away from them. Mm-hmm. And so, as I say, some of these people use these knob carrying. No, I think the chief thing we did was to try and make ourselves as comfortable as possible in the circumstances in the trenches. And there we did become extremely clever, because, I mean, you've got a waterproof sheet and you'll rig up some sort of a shelter. We called it a bivvy or something of that sort, to try and keep away from the elements a bit. Mm-hmm. It did no good as far as keeping off shrapnel or anything. That's quite a concern. Although it's the most astounding thing, even if one gets under a little bit of waterproof, you think you're safer than if